Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on American Family Radio Network. Glad to have you with us today. I'm Walker Wildman. Tim Wildman's also hosting the show, and Steve Jordahl is in studio. Welcome to the studio, Steve.
Thank you. Good to be here. Thousands, in fact, millions are going to be without power today and tomorrow or throughout portions of those days. And it is a planned power outage. You remember last year when they
affecting
a lot of Northern California. Do you remember last year when they had the big fire in Paradise, California? The whole town was burned out and people fleeing. It turned out that the cause of that was power lines and forest interacting. The power lines during a high wind, high heat and high wind event caught the forest on fire because it brushed up against the power lines and then it swept down and got this community. PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, was sued for billions of dollars and lost the suit and had to pay. Well, we have conditions a lot like what happened in Paradise now. High heat, low humidity, and high wind. And so PG&E says, fine, we're shutting you down. They are the first phase, 513 customers. When I get these numbers out, by the way, PG&E says that for every customer that pays, three people are covered. That means that, Tim, if you pay the power, your wife and your daughter,
on average,
you cover three people are in that house. So 513,000 customers, or more than a million people, had their power shut off after midnight early Tuesday morning. This was in a number of counties, mostly in Northern California. Four Bay Area counties were included in the second phase of the shutoff. That affected 234,000 customers. And then a third, smaller phase, about 42,000 customers down into the Silicon Valley in Santa Cruz County, where I grew up. And so it is a planned event. They told them that it was going to happen. People have been stocking up on batteries and everything. But, I mean, they're going to be without power for a significant amount of time until the conditions get better.
Wow. I didn't know you could do that. I thought power companies, well, they've been sued, but are they not public utilities?
They are a public utility. They are owned by the shareholders, and there's a utility commission, a government commission that regulates them.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe this is an unknown, it's kind of unfair to put you on the spot here, but it would seem like the government could tell the company that they can't do that. They can't shut off power to these.
I don't know if they can. Apparently they haven't, if they have, they're ignoring them.
You would think, how can you turn this political, Walker? But you really can.
Yeah.
And let me explain. The way California, I'm speaking generally here, the way the state has been run, it has been run to such an extent that the culling of forest, especially public land, has been non-existent. The cleaning out of the undergrowth of the forest, of the public lands, has been non-existent for years.
Wow.
Are very limited. Because the tree huggers are the green people who don't want to cut down any trees no matter what. They have been fighting, and they have a lot of control in California politically, and thus there is poor forest management. Let me just say that, which leads to, and Steve knows about this too, he used to live there, which makes wildfires much more worse than they could be if forest management was properly carried out.
That's exactly right. You hit it on the head. That's been a battle in California between environmentalists and neighborhoods and communities who say, listen, you're putting us in danger. And the environmentalists say, you know, pristine forests, we want to preserve nature. We don't want to cut down these trees. These are old growth trees, or the squirrels have a home in the underbrush, or whatever it is. I mean, but it sounds ridiculous. They're making it and they're earnestly trying to get the things changed. And then it turns tragic, as it did in Paradise.
Yeah.
Last year.
I really don't blame these companies, this company, PG&E, because It's a. I told you before the break, Steve. It's like a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
If the electric companies keep the power on during high winds, and then a wildfire starts, well, they're sued for billions of dollars. And then if they cut it off for safety reasons, well, then they're sued, are accused.
Yeah, it's a no-win.
Yeah, it's tough.
Maybe they had planned this, and announced it well in advance. And so,
I think they probably had 3 or 4 days of warning that these kind of conditions were coming up, and they probably had a policy in place months or a year ago saying, if this comes up again, this is what's likely to happen. So I don't think it's coming as a surprise, like, oh, I woke up this morning, I don't have any power, and all my food is rotting. But
I just have one question.
Ew.
Is the power out? Does the power outages include Sacramento?
I have a map here. In fact... probably not. Sacramento isn't, because Sacramento's not forest land. I'll show you this map, Tim, and we can maybe post this. SFgate.com has a map there, Brent. The blue here is where they're putting the power outage, and it's just thousands of thousands.
It's in Northern California, but right. It does not include Sacramento?
Doesn't. This is the valley. The valley.
Could that be because that's where the governor lives?
It could be because there's no mountains and no forests.
Hey,
yes.
to your question, yeah. Dad, it appears that the State Utility Commission worked with the power company to schedule this outage.
Okay.
So the State Commission is aware and in compliance with this.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure the lawyers all worked that out before they had to do this. And I understand what you're saying, Walker. You know, you're... you can't win if you're the power company on something like this. And they're worried that the conditions are ripe for what happened last year to happen again. So they just said, we're just shutting down power for a few days.
A day or two until the conditions get better.
Yeah. Whenever I hear power outages, first thing I think about is like nursing homes or hospitals.
There have to be exceptions. They're shutting down grids, nursing homes, power.
You can go on generators
hospitals.
For a while, I guess.
Yeah.
But still, it's very inconvenient. Certainly, mm-hmm. You would hate for somebody to have something wrong, a machine that doesn't work because the power goes out. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I think about those things when I hear about storms that cause people to be without power. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story.
The other breaking thing happening within the last hour is Turkey has launched their military assault in northern Syria against the Kurdish people. President Erdogan has tweeted out the Turkish armed forces together with the Syrian National Army just launched, get this, Operation Peace Spring against PKK, YPJ, and Daesh terrorists in northern Syria. Daesh is the region's language for ISIS, and PKK and YPG are Turkey considers the
Kurdish force?
Kurdish people as terrorists, and that they launched terrorist attacks into Turkey. So they're being very.
And they probably have.
And they may have. But here's from the U.S.
Let me just comment on that.
Please
go ahead.
Yeah.
Because there was no context there. And I am no geopolitical expert, okay, by any means. And I did not stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night either. But Ed Battagliano could comment on this. He knows a lot more about this than I do. But the Kurds and the Turks have been fighting each other for a long time, right?
Right. Yes.
So the Turks look at the Kurds like we do ISIS, you know, in a way.
They do. They consider... Except we, the difference there is, and not to correct, I agree with you. The difference there is ISIS is an ideology. Kurd is
that's
a,
true.
Is
that's a poor comparison. Yeah. Anyway, I'm just saying that
maybe Jews and Arabs.
Yeah, the Kurds, the Turks look at the Kurds as a threat.
Yes,
to their country because they do occupy. They live in large numbers in part of Turkey, and I'm sure there have been guerrilla acts against the Turkey government over the years. So you have to sort of put that in perspective, you know, and understand that that's what I meant by what I was saying.
Here's where it gets political. And Walker, I know you're kind of read in on this as well, I think. The United States and the Kurdish people were a huge ally to the United States during this whole fight in Syria and against ISIS. and we have relied on them for years to and sacrifice blood and treasure on behalf of U.S. interests and their own interests. And when President Trump said he was going to pull out, it opened the quarter for them to do this. He was told it was going to happen. Republicans, big allies like Senator Lindsey Graham, have split hard with President Trump on this. There's a political element to this as well, Walker.
Yeah, I'm torn on this. I understand Senator Graham and others who have said we have to protect the Kurds because of our longstanding alliance with them. But on the other hand, I understand people like Senator Rand Paul who've said we've spent trillions of dollars in the Middle East. American lives have been lost, and the question comes up, for what? Why are we protecting the Kurds other than that they've been an ally? And I agree, if there's a way we can protect the Kurds, maybe we set up, maybe we expedite them to Israel or another ally over there to protect the Kurdish forces. Maybe we can work something out. But this whole idea that we need to stay in Syria and Afghanistan and Iraq and everywhere else in the Middle East for decades and decades and spend billions of dollars and lose American lives, at some point we have to say, how does this serve and protect the American homeland? And I have not heard a very compelling reason for us to stay over there indefinitely.
No, and you're expressing a lot of people's thoughts. Well, President Trump, this is I'll just throw this in, we can move on or you can discuss it, but President Trump kind of drew a red line yesterday when he said that he was going to destroy Turkey's economy if they went in and invaded, and now they're calling his bluff. This could be the red line, the Obama red line thing, or it could be, we could be looking at some increased tensions between the U.S. and Turkey.
I didn't like the way President Trump handled that announcement on Twitter by saying, you know, I know he was being sarcastic, but my matchless and
wisdom,
my matchless
and great
wisdom.
Yeah.
And then he said, if Turkey does try to take on the Kurds, that I will. This is him speaking, the president. I will destroy their economy because I've done it before. Isn't that what he said, Walker?
Yes, that's what he said.
And he tweeted out in all caps.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how he thinks he can destroy the Turkey economy. That just sounds bad.
Yeah.
To me, yeah. That's just my reaction, and I'm a Trump supporter.
A NATO ally? Yeah, it's a front.
He should have handled that more diplomatically.
You know, once again, this is commentary. I'm not a military expert or a foreign policy expert, but with the technology and the high-tech warfare that we have capabilities of now with drones and satellites and cyber warfare, I just don't know if we really need American boots driving tanks and Humvees around the Middle East.
Yeah.
Protect the homeland and protect Israel.
I agree. I agree with that. I think people are tired of it overall. Yeah. You know, I think people on the left and the right.
I've always said if we want to have military bases in Israel, in Europe, in Saudi Arabia, where we can launch missiles and strategic strikes against terrorist leaders or cells, I'm for that. But as far as having military bases in the Middle East,
well, there's always a lot of moving parts over there in the Middle East, and it's very complicated. And as we see here with this Kurd situation, because we want to be friends with Turkey, but we want to be friends with the Kurds. Well, the Turks and the Kurds hate each other in a lot of ways. You know what I'm saying? We wanted to try to help out the Arabs and be friends with the Arabs and the Jews in Israel and in that region. Well, they hate each other. A lot of animosity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we're left with trying to choose sides on things, and then he did this, he did that. But what are you going to do about this? This is the right thing to do here. As I say, of course, when you want to be president, you sign up for that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I will say this, Walker. I understand what you're saying, and that's a Pat Buchanan sort of Rand Paul approach to withdrawal and not much presence over there. But you do have to think about our economy and how oil affects our economy, because we have to keep those shipping lanes open, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's different. That's I know that's different than boots on the ground doing things.
Sure.
But still, you have to factor that. That's a big deal, okay, having the oil mm-hmm. being able to be delivered from the Middle East to our country.
Yes.
To Walker's point, two things I have to kind of address your concerns, I think. Number one, do you remember when Benghazi was going on and we couldn't get airplanes from Italy to Benghazi in time because the launch was delayed and
yes.
stand down and the whole bit?
Yes.
Well, that was a proximity issue.
Mm-hmm.
They had a base that could have responded quicker had they not been told
in
to
Italy,
stand down
I think.
In Italy. Mm-hmm. But yet that you couldn't have done that had they had to launch from the U.S. for sure.
Sure.
The other thing is, you know, President Trump just moved 50 troops out and paved the way for Turkey to roll in. 50 U.S. troops, I might have expressed this yesterday, 50 U.S. troops are not going to be able to militarily defeat a Turkish army.
Yeah.
But if you tell the Turkey that you're going to have to come and roll over 50 U.S. troops and declare an act of war against the U.S. to get there,
sure.
then I think that's a deterrent.
Mm. Well, I'm making why do you need to make an announcement about 50 troops leaving?
Because he's fulfilling a campaign promise that's going to get us out of endless wars, his words.
Yeah.
But I don't.
It's a political. I talked to Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis the other day. He said it's a political decision what he did.
It is.
Militarily, I probably should have stayed. Politically, and McGinnis was in the middle, like you guys on this.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next story.
Did you guys have a chance to talk about the letter that President's lawyer sent to the committees? The president has said that he is not going to comply with what he calls an illegitimate and unconstitutional impeachment inquiry. We've been having bits and pieces of resistance from the White House saying so-and-so cannot testify before your committee, or we're not going to hand over these documents, you got to take a vote first. Well, the letter that came out, and I hold it in my hands, is from a lawyer, an attorney for the president. His name is Pat Cipollone. And Pat Cipollone wrote to Nancy Pelosi, Elliot Engel of Foreign Affairs, Adam Schiff of Intelligence, and Elijah Cummings of Oversight Committees in the House and said, I am writing on behalf of President Trump in response to your numerous legally unsupported demands made as part of what you have labeled, contrary to the Constitution of the United States, an impeachment inquiry. As you know, you have designed and implemented your inquiry in a manner that violates the fundamental fairness. He goes on to give a couple other examples, and he says, for these reasons, President Trump and his administration reject your baseless, unconstitutional efforts to overturn the democratic process. This administration cannot participate in your partisan and unconstitutional inquiry under these circumstances. So he's just saying flat out, do what you need to do, but we're not going to give you anything. We're not going to comply with subpoenas. We think that it's illegal.
Yeah, well, that's and as I said earlier with Fred, you know, until they pass a resolution on the House floor, then President Trump's right and his attorneys are right. They don't have to be turning over documents and witnesses voluntarily.
Yeah, and you know, Nancy Pelosi came out with this big announcement. When was that, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
We're impeaching the president.
Right.
Well, okay. Well, put up or shut up.
Yeah.
Huh? You hadn't done it yet.
Let's
We're going on 2 weeks here, something like that, and you just threw that out there.
Right.
If you didn't have the votes, then you're saying they're trying to browbeat these Democrats who are from districts where Donald Trump won.
Yes.
Right? So these people are torn. I might lose my job as a congressman over this if I join Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, even though I'm a Democrat. I'm talking about them. This is what they're thinking, right?
Yes, that's exactly
right. And I would have thought that she would have had the numbers lined up for a vote almost immediately if you're going to announce it that you're going to impeach, you're going to try to impeach the president. Wouldn't you?
Yeah. Politically, I would make sure I had the numbers.
So you're telling me, you told us last of that she's about eight short.
Yeah, that's from articles I'm reading. She's at least eight short, eight Democrats short in the House.
The thought at the time when she announced this was that she was giving a bone to the radicals that really want the impeachment, but she wasn't advancing the ball at all. Because you remember that Adam Schiff's, or was it alleged Cummings, his committee had already started and he had already named impeachment inquiry. So she just said, we're going to have an impeachment inquiry. They're already doing it. So it's kind of her way of doing something and not doing anything. This is another, let me just throw this poll in that came out, and according to The Hill, rocked Washington. This poll was a Washington Post Char School poll, and it found that nearly 30% of Republicans support in the impeachment investigation, and 20% of Republicans support a Senate vote to remove the president if he's impeached in the House. Since July, the poll found support for an impeachment inquiry has grown by 25 points among Democrats, 21 points among Republicans, and 20 points among independents. Those are a strong number. This is a Washington Post Schar, S-C-H-A-R, school poll.
Okay. Well, and that may be accurate. Who knows? I do know the Washington Post is a very liberal newspaper, owned by Amazon. So for what it's worth, note that. All right, next story.
We're pretty close to the end here. Let's talk about something positive that's going
on. Positive, Steve.
That's right. The governor of Tennessee, Governor Bill Lee, has declared October 10th as a day of prayer, humility, and fasting in Tennessee to thank God for the blessings of the volunteer state and to ask forgiveness, urge citizens to ask forgiveness for the state's past sins. He says it is a voluntary day of prayer, humility, and fasting to try to get out of the way of freedom from religion and those kind of things. Hmm. He's getting a lot of praise for it, and he's getting some pushback from the secular types.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for him. Yeah. Governor
Bill Lee.
Bill Lee from Tennessee. You know, in our country's history, we have a lot of presidents ask for days of prayer and fasting in our history.
Yes, that's right.
If you look down through that. So good for him. He's doing that on a state level. I'm sure the God haters and the freedom from religion people will probably launch a lawsuit.
Well, they haven't yet, but there are rumblings of such.
Oh, it's not even noon.
there's still time left in the day, right?
Give him to 5 o'clock.
Right.
Did he announce this yesterday?
Yes. This tweet came out October 4th. Today's the 9th, so it's been 5 days that he announced this.
What does the proclamation say? Can you read part of it?
I can.
Talking about the governor of Tennessee here.
The governor of Tennessee, whereas the people of Tennessee are thankful for and to call this remarkable state their home from the Smoky Mountains and in name some of the beauty there, whereas we seek forgiveness from our transgressions, from acts of discrimination, oppression and injustice, and inaction, caused by greed, pride, and indifference. Whereas the people of Tennessee seek wisdom and discernment for our state in the days ahead to support thriving families, I therefore, Bill Lee, the governor of the state of Tennessee, do hereby proclaim October 10th a voluntary day of prayer, humility, and fasting.
All right. Can we post that on our... Okay. So go to our... If you've heard anything we've discussed today and you want to read it for yourself, we've posted those stories at our Today's Issues Facebook page. So you can go there and access that information. We thank you for listening, everybody. Steve, appreciate your contributions. Our thanks to Brent Creeley for producing the show and for Walker for helping me out here today. I'm Tim Wildman. We will see you back here tomorrow, everybody.